But I think God's got a word for you guys today. Are you going to receive it? Do you guys want to receive something from God today? Well, if you hang with me, I think it's going to be good. So if you want to open up your phone and take notes or write down on paper, take notes. I believe God's going to speak to us today. But I just want to open up and ask y'all a pretty serious question. Who likes Disney movies? Anybody like Disney movies? Name a couple of she's waving them back. She's like, I like them. What's some favorite Disney movies y'all got? Who? Dumbo. What else? Mulan. Ooh, hey, I'm Asian. I like Mulan. Mulan's good. Somebody said Beauty and the Beast last night, and I said, yeah, that's the story of my marriage. Emily's the beauty, and I'm the beast. But, Yes, Star Wars now is a part of Disney, so somebody can technically say that. But I like Lion King. When I was a kid, I always liked Lion King. And so I just want to open up my message tonight and tell you a little bit about that story. It's probably a familiar one. If you've got kids or grandkids or nieces or nephew, you've probably seen this movie, chances are. It's basically a classic and everybody knows it. But you guys remember that part in the story when Simba had been being disobedient and he ran away and went to that dark place and he ended up getting in trouble and Mufasa, his father, had to save him. And do you guys remember the part of the story in the movie when Mufasa is hanging on the cliff and the gazelles are stampeding? And then what did Scar do? He pushed them off. And I remember being like a five-year-old kid and seeing that and realizing that Mufasa just died. And I'm looking at my mom and I'm like, Mom, what is going on? Why is he dying? Like, this ain't right. Disney is a messed up company. But I want to focus on Simba. Simba had been disobedient. And then he went down there, and what? It hit him. I just had a hand in my own father's death. And Simba was really upset. He was broken. And when he realized that he had a part in his father's death, what did he do? He ran away. He didn't like live a terrible life. He wasn't out like murdering other lions out and other prides or anything like that. Life was pretty good. He made some friends. He was singing, Hakuna Matata, what a wonderful phrase. Y'all know that? Okay, so he's out there, and he's not really living a terrible life. He was still a pretty good guy. But he ran away when his father died. He ran away from who he was supposed to be, where he needed to be, where he was supposed to be. And he ran away from a society that really needed him in a very desperate time because they had just lost their king. And so you may be wondering, why is he bringing up Lion King in the middle of a sermon to begin? But I've seen people do this in the church. I haven't been in ministry that awful long, but before I got up here at Eastland, down in Tennessee, I would see people. They would get saved. They'd make these big old statements. Well, I'm saved. You know, God has set me free. He's broke all my chains. Now I'm going to serve God. I'm going to, you know, I'll be at the church at 6 a.m. every Sunday morning if you need me to be. I'll do whatever. But then life happens. Things get hard. Life punches them in the face. And what do? They run away. They go away and they run away from who God is calling them to be. When God has a purpose for your life and he wants to use you to further his kingdom. And people, it makes me so sad when they say things like, I was all in, but life happened, you know. I'm not the worst person in the world, but you know, those people in that church, I heard them talking about Tim back there, and I can't believe that church people would be saying something about Tim. He's got the voice of an angel. And you know, I can't be a part of something like that. So I'm just going to leave and I'm not going to go to church at all. You know, I was almost that person. I was almost Simba. I almost wanted to just walk away from church after what happened down in Tennessee. I was really hurting and confused and mad at God. And I thought, you know, this is what I was going to do. And it could have been so easy for me just to walk away. But I'm thankful that I stayed a part of my community group with Jamie Jones, and he kept me in the loop, kept me in the word. He kept pushing me. He said, hey, I know this has been messy right now, but I know God's got something for you later. We don't know what it's going to be, but you just keep kicking it for Jesus at the dojo, and God's eventually going to show you what you're going to do. So I said, okay, mentor, I will do that. So kicking it for Jesus, and then a few months later, I get the invite to come up here and start worshiping with you guys, and then eventually it's led to me becoming the youth pastor for the house kids. And it's been so amazing. So I'm so glad that I didn't run away like Simba did. You see, there's been adults in my life that I've seen, and maybe you've been that adult that has said, you know, there was a time when I was really excited about what God might do in my life. I was excited for the possibility that I might be able to do something to further his kingdom. When I was like in my like 19, 18 and younger, there's no way I ever would have thought that I would be in ministry or preaching or anything at all. Yeah, I was in Paducah about a month ago and I ran into a guy I went to high school with. He was about a year or two younger than me. Hadn't seen him in 6 or 7 years. And he's like, "What are you doing up here?" I'm like, "I live up in Metropolis. I'm a youth pastor now." And he's like, "A what? You're a youth pastor?" I'm like, "Yeah, man." My same reaction. But God is good. God changed me, and it made the world of difference. So I want to start today, and I just want you to think about the phrase, "As for you." As for you. What does God want for you? And I'm going to do that today with the life of Peter. And just to catch some of you up, if you haven't been in church in a long time, or if you've never read the book of John or any of the Gospels for that matter, I'm just going to catch you up on a few highlights of the great life of Peter. But Peter was kind of like, he was kind of like a fullback on a football team, you know? He's the guy with like half brain, full of heart, like he'll do whatever. You just say, "Hey, go hit that guy. Don't let him tackle the quarterback or the running back." And that's the only thing you need to tell him to do, because if you tell him to go run out and catch a pass or something like that, he's going to give it to the other team. Okay, so this is Peter. Peter was this guy. Jesus once asked the disciples, he's like, "Who do y'all say that I am? Who do people say that I am?" And Peter was the only one brave enough, and he's like, "I think you're the Son of God." And Jesus is like, "You're right. You got that from God. You got that from the Holy Spirit, and he's giving you that word. You got it." But in the exact same breath, like two sentences later, Jesus is like, "Okay, but now I'm going to go to the cross, and I'm going to die, and I'm going to take everybody's sins, and I'm going to fulfill all the scriptures." And Peter has the nerve, after he just called him the Son of God, to tell the Son of God and rebuke him and say, "No, you're not going to go to the cross, Jesus. You can't do that. Like, you got to be here with us. You need to keep doing all these things." And Jesus is like, "Boy, I know you ain't talking to me like that. I am the Son of God." And so this is Peter. He's not that smart. Or maybe the night Jesus was betrayed. You know, last VBS, you know, we just talked about VBS. Last summer, I had to play Jesus. I guess it's because I was the darkest one at the time, but I had to be Jesus, and Dave was one of my disciples, and we were replaying the story of the night where Jesus was betrayed, and I was telling Dave, "Hey, Dave," or "Hey, disciple, I'm going to go pray, and you stay over here and keep watch." And so Peter was here, and he was asleep. Jesus was up there praying. Some soldiers come to arrest Jesus, and they tell him, they read him his Miranda rights for that time. And he's like, "Jesus, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say or anybody you heal can and will be used against you in the court of law." So Jesus is standing there. Peter comes out. There's these Roman soldiers. They've got these big, long swords. Peter's so smart that he pulls out a little bitty fishing knife and says, "Get behind me, Jesus. I will protect you. I will not let these guys arrest you and take you away. You just get behind me." He tried to kill somebody, and he was so clumsy that he only lobbed off his ear. Like, that's not who I want protecting me, like in a bad time like that. Peter was just very, very unorganized. But they take Jesus away, and Jesus to the courtyard. And so Peter and John, they follow. And Peter's standing there. Peter's watching this crowd mock Jesus and just talk bad about him and saying all these things. And then somebody in the crowd looks at Peter and says, "Aren't you with Jesus?" And Peter's like, "No, I don't know him." Second time, he's like, "But I thought I saw you with Jesus just the other day." "No, I don't know that Jesus guy." "No, you sure do sound like that guy that was just with Jesus the other day." Peter in Matthew, he began to cuss just to prove a point that he wasn't a follower of Jesus. And so he was so ashamed. He's broken. He can't believe that He denied Jesus three times, and just like Simba, he decided to run away. And so the death, the burial, the resurrection had happened. You've got a Peter who's full of shame. Some people are getting happy because they realize Jesus is resurrected. Some people are sad because they don't know yet. Some people are confused. They don't know why this would happen to such a great person. But for some people, hope is beginning to rise. And so at the resurrection, this angel tells Mary in the book of Mark to go tell the disciples and Peter. Go tell the disciples and Peter. I found this so interesting because Peter was one of the disciples. So why would the angel specifically tell Mary, go tell the disciples and Peter? And it makes me wonder, maybe that Peter thought, you know, that call is only for the people that really follow Jesus. I denied Jesus three times. There's no way that he's going to want me to follow. So maybe the angels knew that Peter had this mindset. So they wanted Mary to let him know, hey, we do want you to come. Or maybe it was because, if you're good with temperaments, maybe Peter was a supine temperament and he would get mad if he didn't get a personal invitation, because supines, they like to be invited, but they're not going to tell you that they want to be invited. And then if you don't tell them that you want them to come, they're going to be mad at you for not inviting them. And then they're never going to tell you they're mad at you. So maybe this was Peter. I don't know. Temperaments are pretty cool. You should look into those sometime. But here we are in chapter 21. And we're about to dive into this thing, and I'm going to need you guys to help me preach. Give me amens, hallelujahs, whatever you need to do. Clap your hands. But this is going to be a great day. And the title of my message is Gone Fishing. We have gone fishing. Anybody like to go fishing? I like to go fishing. Yeah, hey, I'll get amens for that. Fishing and fried chicken, and that'll get you your two biggest amens in church. I've been observing all these other pastors and preachers we have here talk about chicken, and you're going to get an amen. But gone fishing. That phrase, I love to fish. I love fishing. You know, you go fishing, take me. I would love to go with you. Jimmy Riley took me fishing the other day, me and Emily. We caught like 20 catfish. We filleted them things up. Well, I didn't. My brother-in-law did, because I didn't know what I was doing. I'm not that manly. So he helped us. But I love fishing. It is so relaxing. If I'm having a stressful week, stressful day, if times are bad, take me fishing, I ain't worried about nothing. But I do like to catch fish. It's not very fun if I'm not. But I want to focus in on chapter 21 of John. We're at the Sea of Galilee, and Peter in verse 3 is like, I'm going fishing. I think that's what people do today. He had been following Jesus. He had been doing all the things. He had seen the miracles. But then he denied Jesus, and he was ashamed, and he says, I'm going fishing. Because that's what we do. He was a fisherman, and that's what we do. When life gets hard, we don't know what to do. What do? We go back to what is familiar. So Peter's saying, I'm going fishing. And it's like this Newton's cradle right here that I picked up at the local Hobby Lobby, because they got good discounts, and I used my coupon on my app. But when we go fishing in life, we want to distract ourselves, and I want to just not think about anything else that's going on. I just want to make myself busy. I want to put my little wormy on the hook, and I want to go fishing and not worry about any of the stresses. I don't want to worry about my bills. I don't want to worry about the next sermon that I could have put together or anything like that. So I got busyness over here, and I got my distraction over here, and all I do is I just get busy, and I distract myself, and I get busy, and I distract myself, I do this, I do that. For Peter, it was fishing. And for some of you, it might be drinking. Life gets hard, you haven't took a drop in 18 months, and then the first sign of trouble that you have, you go back to the bar. We hear people say all the time, well, people at the bar treat me way better than they do with people at the church. Those people at church, they don't like me. You try to tell me that you're going to get real community and fellowship at the bar. Those people are at the bar. Why do you think they're there? They're not there for community. They're drowning their sorrows. They're doing all the things that they know how to do. And you're silly enough to think that you're going to get that same fulfillment by going to that same place that you used to go to. It ain't going to happen. I can promise you that. You get community when you get plugged into the local church. You get plugged into a small group where you're doing Bible studies and all these things and you're growing together. That is where discipleship happens. That's where commitment happens. That's where community happens. And so we don't want to be like that. Or maybe for you it's cutting. You've been through some bad things in your life. Life has dealt you some bad hands. And you're just numb. Your emotions, you feel like you don't feel nothing. You don't feel love. You don't feel hurt. You don't feel anger or anything. Your life is just numb. So you take a little razor blade or you take something and you just decide to start cutting yourself because you can control that. You can feel that pain when you do that. You actually feel something for once in a long, long time. You cut yourself. And it even though it hurts and you know it's a bad thing for you to do, but you just feel like you got to do it because you don't know what else you can do in your life. So you just try to distract yourself by the pain. You're like that old Johnny Cash song, I hurt myself today. Like that song, nobody. Ryan, I told myself I wasn't going to do that again this morning. I did that last night and I got the same response. I'll learn one day. I'm still new at this preaching thing. But Pastor Brian likes it. Thank you, brother. You know, some of us, it's just chasing dreams. We think if we can just get that next dollar, or if we can just get that next house, that bigger house or that fancier car. We think that those things are going to fulfill us in life, but the only thing that will ever fulfill us is Jesus Christ. And he sent his son to die for you and to die for me so that we can live in a fulfilled life. So Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. I guess I better get to the rest of that verse. The disciples said, we'll come too, they all said. So they went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night long. You see, you'll never find fulfillment in going back to the things that God has brought you out of. So I figured somebody would like clap for that because maybe I need to say it again. You will never find fulfillment. When God brings you out of something, he brings you out of that bar, you are not going to find fulfillment. Going back to those things. Those disciples, they thought, we'll just go catch some fish because that's what we know what to do. They fished all night long. If I fish for 30 minutes and I don't catch a fish, I'm not fishing no more. I'm packing up and I'm going home to eat a bologna sandwich. Like, for real. There's so much more things that I could do. But these disciples, they thought, well, we'll just go back. You know, this whole following Jesus thing didn't work up because we thought he was going to be the one that would be the king and everything else. So he let us down. So let's just go back to fishing. But when you go back to those things, you will never find fulfillment in whatever God has brought you out of. And so maybe that's a principle that you need to remember. You will always come back empty-handed like these disciples did. They caught no fish. You see, Peter was also an influencer. He was a leader. He was the dude of the disciples. He was like the hardcore guy. So all these disciples, they're like, well, Peter, you're going fishing. Well, we'll come with you too. And you're a leader as well. Don't ever lie to yourself and say, well, I'm not a preacher. I'm not a pastor. How am I a leader? Do you got kids? You got nieces? You got nephews? You got coworkers? What did I say at the beginning of the message before? That doesn't even apply to my message. Wherever you go, when you receive the Holy Spirit, wherever you go, you will be telling people about Jesus. So you are a leader. Wherever you go, people are watching you. They want to know what you're going to do, and a lot of times people will follow you. I thought it was funny. Like, I laughed when I was studying this past week. I thought it was so funny that they caught no fish, and I really think that was God just playing games with them, because it's not like when you run away that God's just going to be like, oh, well, he's gone. We'll see him later. It's like if you're babysitting a kid, you're not going to be like, you see the kid you're babysitting run out into the street with a bunch of cars. You're going, well, that's not my kid. I'm forget about them. Splat. Like, you're not going to do that. And Jesus ain't going to do that either. He is going to come after you. Just like when Jonah fled from God's command to go to Nineveh, God followed him. Like, there's no way Jonah could have outran the presence of God. And he knew that. But God kept pursuing him and gave him the same command, and the mission never changed. And so I really think God was playing games. And I think I can back this up with scripture, because in verse 4, Jesus is standing on the beach. I didn't put this one up there. Jesus is standing on the beach, and I think Jesus is joking with him because they couldn't recognize him. Like, the Bible says that he was about 100 yards away from the boat that they were in. And Jesus is standing there. And to back up what I'm saying about Jesus has got jokes, he's jokes for Jesus. Like, you remember when Mary was at the tomb and she's crying because she just realized that Jesus was gone. And then Jesus was there, but Mary didn't recognize him. And Jesus is like, "Hey, Mary, why are you crying?" Like, what do you mean? Why is she crying? He knows why she's crying. He thinks that you're gone, Jesus. But Mary doesn't recognize that. And so they're talking back and forth, and I'm really confused. I'm like, why does Mary not recognize that this is Jesus? And in one of the Gospels, it says that Mary thought he was the gardener. Like, did he look like Farmer Fran from Waterboy or something? Because how do you not know that it's Jesus? Like, you've been with Jesus this whole time. Some of y'all don't know who Farmer Fran is. Dave sent me a picture of him last night in the middle of my message. So y'all can Google. That's y'all's homework. Go look up Farmer Fran. He's that guy that's like Boomhauer kind of. But I think Jesus was messing with her there. Or maybe with the two disciples that Pastor Blake just preached about a few weeks ago on the 7-mile walk to Emmaus from Jerusalem. And Jesus walks up and he's like, "What's going on, guys?" And the disciples, their faces are downcast and they're looking downward and they're all upset. And they look at Jesus, but they don't recognize him. And they look at him, the Son of God, and say, "You must be the dumbest man in all of Jerusalem. Do you not know the events that have been taking on in the past several days? Like, Jesus has died." They're telling Jesus about his own death, burial, and resurrection. Like, you can't make this stuff up. Like, Jesus has jokes. And so he walks with them all the way to Emmaus. And they get there, and Jesus is like, "Okay, well, I'm just going to go back over here." And they're like, "No, hey, you've been walking with us all day. Why don't you just come back to our house? We'll feed you, give you some water. We'll break bread together." So they get to the table, and Jesus takes the bread, and like a magic trick, breaks the bread. Poof! Oh, they recognize it's Jesus. And they freak out. They get so excited, they sprint back 7 miles to Jerusalem. And they go in the house, they lock the door so nobody could come in. They're telling the other disciples about, "Hey, we just saw Jesus. We just walked 7 miles with him back to Emmaus. And like, now he's here." The door's locked. Jesus, being the like magician he is, he just shows up in the door, like phases through it, and he freaks them out. No kidding. He scares them by saying this phrase, "Peace be with you." Like, that's not really supposed to be a scary phrase, but these guys freaked out because Jesus said, "Peace be with you," and he just came through a locked door. Jesus has got jokes. But we pick up here in verse 5, and if we can put it up there, verse 5, Jesus calls out, he says, "Fellows, have you caught any fish?" When I was reading this, that is like my brain instantly wanted to go to a British accent. But the Greek word that he uses here for fellows is actually little children. So when Jesus was saying this, he's like, "Dave, little children, little child, Dave, have you caught any fish today?" That's how I say hello to your wife every time. "Hello, Allie." But Jesus is saying this from about 100 yards away. "Little children, have you caught any fish?" And I love this reply. Look at it. "No." "No." Like, can you hear the frustration? Like, can you hear how mad? If I was just fishing all night long for 8 or 9 hours straight and I ain't caught no fish, nobody better ask me if I've caught any fish. Because if not, I'm going to slap them with my fishing pole and like a switch in the yard when our parents used to whoop us with those. Like, that is what I'm going to act like. But I hear their frustration. And then Jesus says to the disciples, hey, cast your net over to the right side of the boat, and then you'll get some. Just visualize, just imagine Peter. He hears this. He ain't caught no fish, and he sees this random guy. He's like, I don't even know who that guy is, but when I get over to the shore, I'm going to punch him right in the face. He's like, oh, you want me to throw it to this side? I'll throw the net to this side. You think I'm going to catch some fish if I go over here? Fine, I'm going to do that. And I think that is how we approach Christianity. That's how we approach Jesus. Jesus gives us a command, and we don't really like it. We're like, well, God, we've been trying to do it all night long, and you think now that I'm going to do it just because you said something? No. When God anoints something, when God ordains something, now it has the ability. Now it can happen. And Jesus has set up this moment, because this was pretty interesting, and I'm sure some of y'all know this, but Jesus did this twice. He did this here in this story, and at the beginning of the ministry, of Jesus' ministry, on the first day that he called Peter to walk with him. Peter was out there on the boat fishing. Jesus come up and said, hey, you ain't catching no fish, just throw it over there. You'll catch a bunch of fish. What did he do? Pulled up tons of fish. So many fish. You guys know the story. But after Peter's greatest failure, denying Jesus three times, Jesus recreated the miracle he used to first call Peter. You see, the connection wasn't lost between him and Jesus. Just because Peter had denied him three times, you think, but I've been saved, but I still mess up. You know, I slam my finger in the door. I say a little four-letter word that I know I shouldn't, you know. Or maybe you're like, but I don't feel connected to God like I used to when I first got saved. I don't feel the enthusiasm. I don't get as excited when it's time to worship. Or I just can't hear him like I used to. No, maybe you're just not listening the way that you need to be listening. Because when we listen the way and we ask God, hey, God, speak to me through your word. When we listen different, he speaks to us different because we're receiving differently than with a perspective of, well, I'm just angry. You're not going to receive anything like that. Or I just don't get excited. I don't know about you guys, but like that's why I like turn around during worship. Like y'all probably wish I was back up here on the guitar, because I'll turn around when I'm on the front row. I'm gonna look you in the eyes. I'm gonna say, come on, let's do this. I'm gonna be connected, because we live in a disconnected culture. I don't know if you realize that, but our culture is so disconnected. My generation, even the adults, we put our faces in these devices and we go fishing. We do all these different things so we don't have to be connected to the reality of the situation that most of the time we put ourselves in. Like Jonah put himself in that situation when he was running away from God. Like he didn't have to do that. All he had to do was be obedient. But that's what we do. And Peter was disconnected. He just wanted to get away and go fishing. So Jesus created that moment again. He was letting Peter know that he wasn't too far gone. And I'm just here to tell you today, neither are you. It doesn't matter your backstory. It doesn't matter what you've been through. It doesn't matter the people you've hurt or the person you've been. Jesus is here to break your chains. He is here to set you free. He is here to let you know that he will never leave you. He will never leave you. So after they caught a ton of fish, we're in verse 7, John looks at Peter and he says, it's the Lord, Peter. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work, because that's what people do, I guess. They go fishing in their tidy whities, and then when Jesus comes back, you gotta put on your tunic, because man, this statement's got so many things wrong with it. You don't swim with a tunic on or your clothes on, but this is what he did. He notices that it's Jesus. Peter looked at him in the eyes and said, "It's the Lord." So he jumped into the water and he headed to shore. Pay attention to this. I don't want you to miss this, because he looked directly at Peter. He said, Peter, it is the Lord. It's not for anybody else. It's not for Zacchaeus in the tree. It's not for Mary in the tomb. It's not for Matthew in the tax collecting booth. This is for you. Peter has showed up for you, Peter. You need to go to him. So maybe if you hear my voice this morning, maybe I'm preaching all this stuff and it's not for anybody else in this room, but for you. Only you know. Only you can be obedient and respond to the call of God this morning. And maybe all this effort, everything that we've done this morning is for you and to give God glory and for God to set you free. You just have to walk through it. So I hope some of y'all respond like Peter tonight and stop running away and start running towards God. So we're in verse 9 and 10. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them. I bet Jesus can make a good sunny side up. Fish cooking over a charcoal fire. Everybody say charcoal fire. Charcoal fire. Anybody, who's king of the hill? Who's the Hank Hills in the place that like propane only? Who likes the charcoal? Charcoal, yeah, that's the way to go. Charcoal is the way to go. So Jesus is there. He's cooking fish on a charcoal fire. There's an interesting principle that I saw when I was reading this. So Jesus just told them, catch all these fish. They caught all these fish. Jesus is already sitting on the shore. He's already cooking fish. He's got his own fish. But he says, hey, bring y'all's fish over here. We'll cook them up too. You see, God doesn't need what you have, but he still invites you to participate. That's why we talk about contributing. That's why we talk about getting plugged in, being involved, because we all have a part to play. And God wants you to bring that stuff to the table and start cooking that stuff. Because you've heard me say before, cake is a lot better when you've had your hands in the process and you cooked it yourself. It tastes a little bit better. And that's the same way that ministry is. That's why we all get excited when we do worship or we preach or anything like that. Because we see the life change. We see people hands-on getting set free from addictions, from porn, from all these different things that people are attached to and connected to and disconnected from the real thing that they need to be connected to. That's something to get excited about. And so, yeah, we can clap. That's okay. I told y'all to help me out. I was wondering if I wasn't doing too good, Pastor Brian, because I ain't heard too many claps. But I told you to say charcoal fire for a reason. He also did, this was only used twice as well. Once here, Jesus is cooking with the charcoal fire. And then the other time was after Peter denied Jesus three times. It was a cold night. And Peter warmed his hands up with a charcoal fire. And I believe God did this. Jesus did this. He recreated this moment to tell Peter, hey, I know you denied me, but we got to talk about these things. Like, I know that this is probably going to be a difficult conversation, but we have got to talk about this stuff because you're not living the life that you're supposed to be living, Peter. And so maybe that's you. That's why one of our principles is coaching here at Life Church. Our core value is reaching, teaching, coaching people. Because life coaching changes things. If you've been hurt in your past, if you're a victim of abuse or of rape or anything like that, you've been through some hard stuff, divorce, all these things count. And Pastor Brian offers life coaching. He's certified. He is one of the best that I have ever seen. He's had people driving from East Tennessee coming over here to get life coaching from him on their marriages. Now they're going on vacation together after they were just going to be getting a divorce. And the only way that it happens, it's not Pastor Brian. It's God giving him the words to speak to these people, to breathe life back into their marriages. And maybe that's you. Your marriage is in shambles. You don't know what you're going to do. You're inches away from giving up and walking out on the commitment that you made in front of God and your spouse. And he's saying, hey, here's a charcoal fire. It's warm, it's hot, it's gonna hurt, but let's talk about these things so that you can get the healing. Because sometimes when we talk about these things, it hurts, but it never harms. And when we do that, it hurts. It does. It's like when you got a wound open and you put peroxide on it. It bubbles and it stings a little, but it makes you better. So Jesus had recreated this moment so that Peter didn't have to hide behind his familiarity anymore. Peter's just sitting there with his Newton's cradle going back and forth. And Jesus, being the great God that he is, he just recreated this moment. But in verse 15, after breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Simon, son of John, that's like being called by your full name by your mama. That's like my Aunt Stephanie over here. I've heard her tell Makai, my little cousin, y'all seen him work the coffee shop and stuff before. Alejandro, Makai Watkins, you better get in here right now. Like, you hear that, you know. Like, I can remember being a little kid. I'd have my boys over. We'd be playing video games, playing NFL Street. And then we're sitting there, and I hear, "Jace Dean Hargrove?" And I'm like, Tyler, my buddy's like, "Jace, what's going on?" I'm like, "Dude, I don't know, but it's bad, and I got to go right now. I've got PTSDs. I'm triggered," because that's what everybody likes to throw around. They're triggered nowadays. But I'm getting all these flashbacks of the butt whoopings that I've been given. But Jesus is calling him by his full name. And he says, "Do you love me more than these?" It could have been about the disciples. I really don't know. Maybe if you know, I've tried to do a lot of research on what these are, but I'd love to know. Maybe it was disciples. Maybe it was the fish. Maybe you're saying, "Peter, do you love me more than these fish? Because you just denied me 3 times, but now you're going back to fishing. Like, do you think that's going to be a better purpose for your life than following me and doing all the miracles that you've seen me do?" Maybe he was doing that. I don't really know. And it's not really clear. But when I first became a Christian and I started reading the word more, I really focused in on the Gospels. I would just read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And that's all I would read because I just wanted to know what Jesus said. And so I would read this and I'd think, "Man, Jesus must be mad." And isn't that us though? Like, we think that we get in trouble, we just automatically assume that our parents are mad at us, that our coworkers or our boss, they're mad at us. And so I just imagine Jesus being mad here, but he wasn't. He asked him 3 times, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He asked him 3 times, the exact same amount of times that Peter denied Jesus in front of those people. So again, he's recreating this moment. But each time he tells him, "Do you love me? Well, then feed my sheep." "You love me? Then go feed my sheep." "Do you love me, Simon, son of John? Do you love me? Well, if you love me, then go feed my sheep." Because realize this, guys, Jesus wants to point you forward. He does not want to direct you backwards. He has a purpose. He doesn't want you going back to that bar. He doesn't want you going back to that old addiction that you have. He don't want you going back to that computer screen. He doesn't want you to do any of those things, but start going forward to the places that he is calling you if you will just be obedient. So when we realize that and we go feed the sheep, our lives are a lot better. Some of us go fishing and we stay in the past. We think, "Oh man, those were the good old days. Man, we would go down there to the bar, we'd have us a couple Bud Lights. We would just think that life is great when we're doing those things." I remember, man, you remember when we used to ride them back roads and we would shoot the .22 pistol out the window at the road signs? Man, life was great when we did those things. I don't know how we survived all those nights we were drinking and driving, but somehow we did. And we just think that these things are going to give us fulfillment, but they never do. And then Peter did this thing. He did this thing when we do with our parents. Some of you have parents in the room. Your kids have said this if they've got siblings. Peter asked Jesus, "But what about him, Lord? You just gave me a butt whooping. What about John? You're not going to give him a butt whooping too?" Jesus replied, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?" Say the next 3 words with me. "As for you." "As for you, Peter, follow me." Maybe if you're hearing my voice this morning, as for you, you need to follow Jesus today. As for you, you need to not be worried about what that person next to you is going to think. You're doing that thing that we did. Well, what about Ryan? You know, he needs to get in trouble. That's what Carissa used to say. But it's not about Ryan. It's not about Dave or Allie or Callie or my wife or Jessica or, I don't know why I just called you Jessica by your full name. I'm sorry. Jesse or Maddie. It is about you. It's not about anybody else. Yeah, but if I do that, my girlfriend, she don't like to go to church. She don't like to have Christian standards. It's not about your girlfriend. It's not about your boyfriend. It's about you. You need to focus on your walk with God, your relationship with God. You don't need to be worried about what anybody else thinks. It is about you. This whole setting today, I believe, is for somebody. God wants to set somebody free, and he's going to open up the door, but he's not going to run around behind you and judo kick you in the butt and tell you to run through it. You are going to have to take the step. You're going to have to get honest. You're going to have to put aside your pride and your shame and your worry and all these things that have been knocking you down for 35 years. You just need to quit fishing and say, God, I'm going to follow you, because that's what you've called me to do. And wherever I go, I'm going to tell people about Jesus. I'm going to be the one that shines your light in dark places, in dark lives, in dark communities, in dark workplaces, and wherever I go, I don't have to be afraid, because you never let go. And so today, as we jump up on our feet, you don't got to jump. Some of you can shake your knees loose. But maybe you're thinking, how can Jesus so easily forgive Peter? Or myself, for that matter? Because Jesus paid for it. Jesus died on that cross to pay for your sin. Peter denied Jesus, yes, 3 times. He denied him. But that was before the death, the burial, the resurrection. And so Jesus is standing here before Peter. Peter's saying, how can you forgive me for denying you 3 times? You told me I was going to do that, and I didn't believe you, but I did it. But Jesus is like, dude, I know what you did, but I paid for it. I know what you did. I buried it. I resurrected for you, for you, for you, so you can be set free. So